Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
From the offices of Create and Cultivate, this is Work Party, a podcast for women who are redefining the meaning of work on their own terms. In each episode, we tap experts on topics that matter most to the modern working woman. Whether you are running the show or working your side hustle, we're bringing in leading female entrepreneurs to share their stories with you. Are you ready to create and cultivate the career of your dreams? Well, welcome to Work Party, the podcast. I am Jacqueline Johnson, your host. Today's episode is all about getting your business off the ground, or as I like to say, start by starting. This is the number one question we get at conferences and on social. When do I start my business and how? Well, there are a couple different things to think about when getting your business off the ground. The first part is understanding what you want to do. Step one, what is your business? How will it work? And more importantly, how will it make money? Cold, hard cash. So essentially, knowing the nuts and bolts of the business you want to launch. And also, understanding your financial runway, how much you need for month one, month two, and so on and so forth. Set goals for yourself and understand your upfront expenses before you take the leap. Step two is the fun stuff, determining your name, tagline, and brand. Step three, once you have all those things figured out, is actually starting the company, filing the business, registering the trademarks, copyrights, patents, getting your operating agreement in place, partner agreements, all the legalities that come with starting a business. These are important and often expensive. But what's even more expensive is not handling these out the gate and having to deal with the aftermath. Our expert today will give us some pointers on the legal side of things, so stay tuned for that. When starting a business, there are a few crucial items and things to consider. First and foremost, the name. Once you figure out that incredible show-stopping name, you need to do a trademark search. Now note, there are different classifications of trademarks and uses. For instance, businesses that are totally different can actually have the same name if they're in different classifications. The more classifications you get, the more expensive it can be. My advice is to acquire as many classifications you think you will need, no matter how far in the future you're thinking. For instance, you can get a media trademark, an events trademark, an apparel trademark, etc., etc. Trademarks are crucial because they protect your IP. And while they're expensive, they're so important because the last thing you want to do is launch a brand and then see someone else using the same name. The only other thing to consider alongside the trademark is your web URL and your social handles. Nowadays, pretty much every URL is taken, but you can get creative with weareblankblankcompany.com or using .co, which is equally as acceptable as .com. If the name is hugely important to your company, it might be worth the splurge of buying a URL that already is for sale. For social handles, try to keep them consistent across the board. So it's at blah, blah, blah business on every single platform. I've also known friends who have reached out to people who have their handles and they've bartered dollars to acquire the name. If you're on social and your account is already taken, but the account is dead or not active, you can usually report it. And if you own the trademark, you can wiggle your way in to getting that handle. So to recap, number one, have a brilliant business idea. nail down the financials, and figure out your financial runway. Step two is the fun stuff. Figure out the brand name, tagline, logos. And step three, get your URLs and social handles locked and loaded. And step four is the paperwork, the legalities. And for that, I am bringing in the expert and resident CNC lawyer, Brenda Shammy, who is a partner at Ticino & Shammy, a law firm based out of Miami that focuses on creative entrepreneurs and business owners. So welcome, Brenda.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. So today we're talking about kickstarting your business. So we obviously have a lot of entrepreneurs listening and people who have their side hustles, but maybe are now trying to take that to the next level. So first and foremost, can you walk us through business structures? So I'm talking LLCs versus partnerships. What does it all mean and what do new business owners have to know?
Absolutely. So a lot of people don't really understand that when somebody says, hey, do you have a company? Most people think of that as just an abstract kind of, yeah, I have a company, I'm selling things. And having a company actually means that you have a legal structure. And for, you know, the sake of simplicity, there are two main types of companies that you should be aware of. One is an LLC, which stands for a limited liability company. And the second is a corporation or an Inc., like you see it abbreviated. The main difference between these two has to do with structure and tax implications. And so, briefly speaking about each, the LLC is 9 times out of 10 for new businesses going to be the right structure. Another important thing to know is that you can always go from an LLC to a corporation, but you can't do it the other way around. So you can't undo a corp, but you can go from an LLC to a corp. So that's one interesting thing to know. The other thing is that both types of companies, an LLC and a corporation, actually protect you from liability. And so what does that mean? What that means is that when you start a business, inevitably, if you are successful, eventually someone will sue you. And, you know,
famous words.
Mason, exactly. Mason Diddy said it best, more money, more problems. So the bigger you get, eventually, you know, it's inevitable. And so what a company, whether it be an LLC or a corporation, does is it allows you to protect yourself personally from liability. And that means that they can sue the company and they can potentially go after whatever assets the company has, but they would never be able to come after you personally, generally speaking, of course. So that protection is given through both types of companies. And that's one of the most important reasons why you want to make sure that you have a legal structure set up when you're starting a business. The other main reason would be tax implications. So as you know, as you start a business, you hopefully are bringing in a bunch of money. And if you don't have a company, you would essentially have to pay taxes on all of the revenue that comes in. If you do have a structure, an LLC or a corporation, what that allows you to do is to start expensing things. So when you start expensing things, it lowers your tax exposure, meaning that you only pay for the difference between what you make and what you expense. Whereas as an individual, you're not allowed to do that. So that's one of the bigger advantages of having a legal entity set up.
I love that. And I also think so many freelancers who don't think of themselves as quote unquote businesses, this is exactly why I think you should be starting and thinking of yourself as more of a business, as an LLC, for those reasons versus, you know, just Julie Smith, you know, doing her freelance work. It's, you know, you can incorporate yourself up as an LLC as a freelancer. And you, like you said, you get all those benefits that come with it. So
100%. And it also sets you up for the future, right? So starting an LLC, even if, like you said, you're just doing freelance work or consulting here and there or an independent contractor, starting yourself as a company, one, like you said, gives you all those benefits. We talked about taxes and liability protection and all those other things. And it also kind of sets you up for future growth. So should you want to take on a partner, you already have the structure in place. Should you want to take on investors? Should you want to take on employees? All of those things, as you continue to grow, you already have the structure and the foundation set up for yourself.
Exactly. So another thing that comes up quite quickly when you're starting a company are trademarks, copyrights, and patents. How important are these when you're first starting out?
Sure. So first and foremost, really quickly, let's go through the difference between the three, because I know a lot of times people kind of mix these up. So a trademark is, think of it as the name of your brand or your logo. So Work Party, for example, or, you know, Create and Cultivate. Those are all things that are trademarks that, you know, you can, you, it's your brand essentially, right? And actually the way trademarks work are there, you don't just own the word in and of itself, but instead you choose what classes of goods and services you want to register the mark in. So that's trademarks. Copyrights are more things, we use them for music. So musical compositions, for books, for graphic design work, scripts, things like that. What's important to know about copyrights is that when you register a copyright, it's in the public domain. So you want to make sure that you're ready to use whatever you're doing before you register that copyright, because if not, the entire world technically has access to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing are patents, and patents are inventions. So let's say you came up with a really cool continuum transfunctioner, I don't know, right? So whatever kind of, it's usually a physical device, and it can also be an improvement on an already existing invention. So that's the difference between the three. More likely than not, for people like us, we're going to be talking about trademarks and copyrights most often, mm-hmm. and probably trademarks more than anything. And I think, you know, you asked, why are they important? They're almost monumental and fundamentally important at right when you start your business, because what happens is you come up with a name for your business, you fall in love, you create an identity, you create a brand, only to find out a year later that somebody already owns it and you're either going to have to pay big bucks for it or you're going to have to change your name. And people don't realize how important that is, especially because with social media nowadays, your brand is everything.
Mm-hmm.
You can create, a brand that sells nothing and people will still follow it and decide what you want to sell later. And the only real way to protect that brand is through trademarks and copyrights and other IP protection.
So another big question when people are first starting out is they have a business partner in the venture, they have a co-founder, whatever it might be. I think this is really common. What are the key things to outline amongst partners when you're first building out like those initial conversations and paperwork?
Great question. I've lived it. I've fought it. I've been a lawyer to it. This is something that happens so often, especially amongst friends. And more often than not, you start businesses with people you love, people you believe in, people you trust. And you think, oh, it's fine. You know, we don't need any of this stuff because we're best friends. And I wish I could just show everybody how that ends up working out.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing, and this to me is like a life, not just in business, but in general, is to lay out clear expectations of each party. So even if you don't have, a fancy lawyer or, a lot of resources, I would very, very much, advise partners, especially at the beginning, to outline expectations for themselves and for each other. And so, these are the things I'm responsible for. These are the things you're responsible for. And then everything in between we'll work on together. Because I think that, as things come up, people start to feel like they do more or they do less or whatever the case may be. And that's usually where I see the most breakdown in partnerships.
Things change. Like it is like one thing is constant. It's change. And I think people change, circumstances change, businesses move really fast. Like I couldn't stress this enough. So can you talk a little bit about what an operating agreement is and what should be in it?
Absolutely. So an operating agreement is essentially, in the most simple way, kind of the rules of your company. And so it's all the what ifs. So first, an operating agreement outlines, who the owners are, who the managers are, who put money into this. And then it goes into things as detailed as, what should happen if somebody wants to sell their equity? What happens if you guys want to bring on another partner? What happens if somebody wants to buy out the company? All of these things. And an operating agreement to me is fundamental. And some people overlook how important it is to have that at the very beginning when there's nothing, right? Because when there's money or debt, these decisions become incredibly complicated. But when you make them in hypotheticals, it's easy to do. And so an operating agreement essentially outlines as many different scenarios or situations that a company can kind of face. And it decides, is this going to be something that we unanimously have to agree on? Is this going to be that something that a majority agrees on? Is this something that only the founders agree on? Whatever the case may be. So an operating agreement, you know, it's usually a pretty lengthy document. And sometimes, you know, it has some legal jargon in it. But the most important fundamental aspects of an operating agreement is to outline how the company operates, right? And I don't mean that in the sense of like you come into work and you do this, but I mean more so in a more, you know, umbrella sense of, you know, who are the owners, what's going to happen, who's responsible for what, and so forth.
So an example of that would be like, you're in charge of the finances and like the day-to-day financial stuff, like something like that?
Absolutely. I actually encourage my clients as often as I can to create a Schedule A, so like an exhibit at the end of their operating agreement with the roles of each of the members. If they already know, for example, hey, you're the member that's going to be handling all of the client relations. Okay, I actually encourage as much detail and as much information as you can put into that operating agreement, the less room there is for gray area later.
And can you change an operating agreement? Like, should it change over time?
Absolutely. An operating agreement can change over time, over circumstance. It can change as long as the partners and the owners agree to change and everybody agrees with what the changes are, you can change it as often as you'd like. It also changes sometimes when you get investors. It also, you know, may change if, like you said, right? People change, circumstances change, businesses change very rapidly. So as long as, you know, and again, these are the rules of the company. So if the operating agreement says that as long as everybody agrees, we can change the agreement, then as long as everybody signs, we can change the agreement.
Amazing. Agree to agree. Okay, so let's talk about employees. So obviously your business is doing well, you're growing, you add people to your team. One, do you make employees sign contracts and do you make them sign NDAs? And maybe you can tell us, you know, define what an NDA is.
So an NDA or a non-disclosure agreement, essentially what it is, it's almost like a confidentiality agreement. So a lot of young entrepreneurs and people don't realize that a lot of the things that to them are second nature are actually trade secrets or kind of insider info that they don't even realize is valuable. I see this a lot with a lot of my social influencers, that they think that, oh, you know, I'm really good at Instagram. That's not a talent, but you'd be surprised. And so whether it be social media, whether it be that you're just really knowledgeable about something or just how you run your business, all of those things are trade secrets, right? And so an idea is actually not something that you can legally protect, except to the extent of non-disclosure agreements and certain other documents like that. So I'm a big fan of having anybody who's going to come into your business, whether it be permanently, temporarily, an independent contractor, an assistant, even somebody that's just there for the day, anybody who's going to be intricately intertwined with the day-to-day of your business, I'm a big fan of having them sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Same. and then what about contracts for employees? Is that like standard to do like a year-long contract, or is it more just like, here's a simple hiring agreement?
Yeah, so I will kind of full disclosure tell you that this does vary from state to state. The mm-hmm. employment law varies very much from state to state. As a general rule, when it comes to employees, you don't necessarily need a big, long contract. For higher level executives, we usually do encourage that just because there's a lot more back and forth. There's a lot more give and get. And then for independent contractors, I am a big fan of contracts. And that's because there are specific deliverables that are expected. And because independent contractors are essentially, you know, their own entities and not employees in that sense, I'm a big fan of having a contract to outline what I expect from you and what you expect from me.
Absolutely. So break down what the biggest mistakes new business owners make.
Oh, there's so many. I think it's also what helps you grow, right? So I've been very fortunate to be involved in many, many businesses. And I think it's what makes, you know, my partner and I kind of have a competitive advantage, because I've made these mistakes myself. And I think that I'd probably, if I have to pick one, it's not setting clear expectations amongst partners at the beginning. I think that that's probably the biggest mistake that I see most often.
I mean, I've been there. I've lived it. It's in the book Work Party. Read about it, people. and Brenda and her partner, Chris, got me through it all. So thank you so much, Brenda. We will have her contact info where you can find her. I can't recommend you guys enough. You're such a badass. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. And, you know, anytime we can work together is an honor. So super excited to be doing this.
Okay, so let's take a minute to check in on all things Create and Cultivate with Teal, our marketing coordinator. Welcome, Teal.
Hey, Jackie, it's episode one. I'm so excited.
So major. So today's episode, as you know, is all about starting your business and the key steps to get it rolling.
Okay, cool. So many women I meet at Create and Cultivate events are doing that. They're launching their business while working their 9-to-5. So if you've never been to a conference, make sure you check it out. There's tons of valuable information, and it's a great networking opportunity for you, too.
I mean, I couldn't agree more.
On the Create and Cultivate blog, we interview lots of women about how they got their start and what they did to move past the fear of the unknown when they launched their business.
Yes, we have so many interviews on the site. I mean, one of my favorites is Jenny Britton Bauer's story about starting Jenny Splendid Ice Cream.
Right, which was started in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from, which is
shout
cool.
out Ohio.
Jenny actually started her business right after she dropped out of art school. So you can read more about her story. It's super inspiring. And on the Create and Cultivate blog, we also have great interviews with ladies like Cindy Ramirez, the founder of Chill House, Laura Fine, CEO of Laurel and Wolf, Dana Trout from Health Aid, and tons of other amazing women. So make sure you go to createcultivate.com to read more.
Perfect. Thanks, Teal.
Season one of Work Party, the podcast, is brought to you by LinkedIn.
Before we introduce you to our special guest, allow us to introduce you to LinkedIn, the world's largest professional network and our partner for season one of Work Party, the podcast. LinkedIn is a community of over 500 million professionals that are ready to help, support, inspire, and push you to achieve your goals. Whatever your definition of success is, there are people on LinkedIn that can help you get there. So we talked about the key steps to take when starting a company. So now let's talk to a woman, a legend, who has done this time and time again successfully. Welcome to the show, Bobbi Brown.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So take me back to when you started your first business. Did you have a business plan? Did you have a strategy? Or did it all sort of happen organically?
Well, I'll start by saying that I was the kid that got D's in math, probably a C in science, but I did in art, I got A's. So my career, I graduated college, my career landed me in the makeup world as a makeup artist. I never in a zillion years thought I would ever be a brand, have a brand, and any of the business was really on the job training. I knew nothing. I did not have a business plan. I didn't even know what a business plan was.
Do you think sometimes that's the recipe for success? Because similarly, I didn't have a business plan. It was a total mistake, kind of born out of creativity, and especially for you, the love of the craft. So do you think sometimes going into it a little blind is sort of the best strategy?
You know, I think that everyone has different ways they approach things. You and I might be very similar, that we are women that no matter what, we're going to figure it out. We're going to get it done. And what I didn't know, I loved figuring out. I still love doing things. I have no idea what I'm doing. So I had no idea what it meant to start a business. And I had an idea. And it was an idea that didn't exist.
And I love that. And I think that's so true. And I think it's the ideas that drive us and sort of the journey, no matter how rough the road can be. So can you talk a little bit about some of the early mistakes you made when launching your first company and the brand, and maybe some of the early successes you had and early wins?
Sure. Well, I will tell you about mistakes. The greatest thing about mistakes is that's how you learn not to do the same thing. So I never would have learned, you know, seriously the things that I learned if I didn't have to go through it. So some of the mistakes I made, of course, I hired people that really weren't the right people for a job, the job. That happened many times. And eventually when I was in corporate, you couldn't just say, you know what, it's not working, goodbye. So that was always a big struggle. And also, you know, making mistakes. I once brought out a line called color options because someone, you know, had told me that she thought it looked really boring, the natural neutral colors. So, and it was kind of a big mistake. The colors were garish and they just didn't work.
It is like sort of a test it out and try it type deal. And it's easy to make the mistakes, like you said, when you're first starting out and maybe not as big because no one notices them. But as you get bigger, those mistakes get more public. And as you said, going from a startup culture to corporate, obviously those mistakes have a lot of eyes on them, which can be really difficult. So what were some of the early wins you had and successes?
Well, certainly when we launched 10 lipsticks at Bergdorf Goodman, we thought we would sell 100 the first month and we sold 100 the first day.
Amazing.
That was a big win. You know, selling the company in 4 years, I mean, unheard of.
Unheard of.
Right. So, and you know, and staying as an employee for 22 years, also unheard of.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And obviously at the end of 2016, you made the decision to leave your namesake cosmetic brand. What sparked the exit for you? And obviously noting that you were there for, you know, 20 plus years.
Right. Well, you can imagine it was not an overnight decision where I woke up one day and said, I'm done. But, you know, the last couple years were a big struggle. You know, I am definitely someone that thinks I can always do things better. I can always fix things. And every little detail matters to me. The people that worked for me matter to me. The names of the products, how they looked, the packaging, every little detail. And I bet it was, you know, frustrating for, you know, someone somewhere that I was constantly saying, no, that's not good enough. No, it's not right. So, I fought it. I won for a while, and then I just got tired of fighting. And I realized it was time for me to be the boss.
Totally. And all of those attributes are what makes such a great entrepreneur, is being so dedicated, caring about the details, caring about your people. And you know, that's such a true mark of such a great sort of innovator. So since leaving, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned about yourself?
You know, since leaving, I realized that I either that I was not meant to sit in a big giant office. Mm-hmm. That's number one. But I also really realized that, you know, right now after having a big success, it's okay to just go and do and try things, because if it doesn't work, it's not a failure. It's just an opportunity to do something else.
Absolutely. And this year, we've seen the return of Bobbi Brown, the person. Yes. You've launched your lifestyle platform, Just Bobbi, as well as a wellness brand, Evolution 18. So can you share a little bit more about launching those projects and why they're meaningful to you?
Well, for me, it's really the what's closest to my heart. You know, when I started the makeup company, that was the closest thing to my heart, that and my children. But right now, what I really believe in is a combination of health and wellness and just full on creative freedom. So the lifestyle brand has allowed me to develop a hotel, to create wellness products that are really lifestyle inspired, that are things that I need in my life. And I know, you know, that they will help a lot of women in their life. And, you know, right now the world is my oyster. I have opportunity to do other things and other products, and I'm working on a bunch of them.
That's so exciting. And you've always sort of shown this interest in health and wellness, especially in all your books. So was a wellness brand in the back of your mind, you know, for the past couple of years? And like you said, now potentially getting into hotels and all these other things. Have these been brewing for a while, or did you take some time off to explore what interests you?
Well, they've always been part of who I am. I mean, so it's not really a wellness brand. It's more a lifestyle brand. And I've always taught and preached, you know, health when it comes to beauty. My 9th book, which actually came out like almost 3 months after I left the company, is called Beauty from the Inside Out. And it's really teaching how the right foods makes a big difference and how to change your health and how to change your beauty. So that was a gift for me. And just lifestyle for me is just, you know, empowering and teaching women how to be confident, how to live a better life, and how to do it where it matters. You know, how you can have a family and have your career, and just how you just have to go for it. So it's kind of like a big holistic brand right now.
Totally. And it has so many facets to it. And, you know, I remember getting one of your books growing up, Pretty Powerful. And it was so impactful to me. And obviously seeing the launch of the line and your trajectory and now being a businesswoman myself and seeing you, you know, move on past this and launch other things and then obviously give back by publishing this on your platforms has been super inspiring.
Thanks.
Of course. So now you're back in essentially startup mode. So right. What is exciting about that?
Well, it's exciting and it's, you know, I won't say it's terrifying. It's, sometimes it gets frustrating because I have three people on my team. One of the girls is a combination of my assistant and all the digital. I literally hired her out of the Apple store. I just pulled her out. And the other two girls, we don't have titles. They have built three websites. They worked on the hotel. They launched the wellness products. They're working on so many other things. I don't know how they do it. And it's really cool and exciting. But sometimes I think, well, what if I had five more people?
Right.
What if I had one more person? But it's kind of cool. And I love being scrappy. Mm-hmm. I do. I realize how much time, energy is wasted in meetings and how much money is wasted on expensive packaging. And just even like gifts to the editors and how you send out things. We printed stickers for all our brands. We put them in a really cool, simple bag and we put a sticker on it. And it's very indie.
I love it. And honestly, scrappiness breeds creativity, truly.
Yes.
I think when you have limited resources, you kind of get as creative as possible. And I've only run small businesses. I think the most people I've ever had on my team was about 15 people. And I felt like that was a great max in terms of resources. It's almost like the law of diminishing returns. Like once you start getting bigger, things will sometimes scale back in that sense. You know what I mean? Like people get less and less productive. But one of the most challenging parts of being an entrepreneur is obviously hiring and finding the right people. So obviously you're poaching people from Apple stores. So you can get really creative about where you're finding these people. But what are some of your tips to build a strong team?
Well, I don't know if this is like a correct tip or not, but I always hire people that I actually like spending time with, that I would be happy to go out for dinner with. And it's important because you spend so much time together and they need to kind of understand who you are. And I just really like people that I have total comfort in conversation. So that's something I look for. I also look to hire people that are good at things that I am not.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I am someone who's very aware of what I'm not good at, even though I think I'm really good at my Instagram and my youngest son tells me I should hire a professional. So
I love that. So when it comes to corporate culture, so obviously when Bobbi Brown Cosmetics was acquired, obviously became a much more corporate infrastructure. What lessons have you learned that were helpful for you just from a corporate perspective that you've now applied to your startup business?
Well, I certainly value and have total gratitude for everything that, you know, Estee Lauder gave me. There's no question. It allowed me to, you know, to see the world, to work with great people. It allowed me, you know, my whole family to have this amazing life. I know now it's not where I ever want to be again. If my new company ever gets sold to a bigger company, I will not stay.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I know that. I know I'm really good creating products. I'm really good creating brands. And that's what I want to do.
I love that. And so you've successfully been able to turn your passions, your craft into a concept and then a reality, which is extremely difficult to do.
Right.
Do you have any advice for someone that might be struggling to bring their own passion to life in terms of making it a real business?
Stop talking about it. Just do it. Don't wait till you think you have the money to do it. Figure out how to do it. Tell people about it. I mean, some people call it market research. I just say, ask everyone you know. And figure out how you're going to bring it to the market. And guess what? If you make two of them, sell one. Then the money that you get from the sale, make another one. So, to me, that's how you grow a brand. And that's how you test and make sure that people actually love what you're doing.
Absolutely. And it's so funny because the name of this episode is called Start by Starting, because the reality is you have to put the pedal to the metal to even get things out to market, like you said, and honestly put it out there, see what fails. Are you a fan of, and I'm always so interested in this question, like 80% it, get it done, get it out into the world, or 100% make sure it's perfect and then release it?
No, I am much about get it out. And, you know, and being able to adapt it, you know, once you're ready to get it out, get it out. I mean, don't bring it out until you are confident that it's the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So if you could give your early entrepreneurial self advice looking back, what would it be?
It would be to learn how to type. It's been honestly the most frustrating part of my entire career. I've written 9 books. So I figured out other ways to do it. I wish I could type.
Right. It's so funny because that seems so obvious. But for you, you were out in the field doing makeup and really building those things versus like sitting behind a desk and typing all day. So I love that.
Right.
So obviously 2018, social media is queen. Everyone's on Instagram. Everyone's launching businesses. Influencers are founders. Founders are influencers, blah, blah, blah. In 2018, what do you think it takes to be a successful entrepreneur?
I think honestly, there's nothing like hard work. There's nothing like being incredibly focused and stubborn in what you believe in, but at the same time, be open to turn right or turn left or go back or stop. So you've got to just be focused, and it's nothing is easy, but you have to at least be open to know when you have to change something. Social media is everything. I am not someone that really believes in the entire influencer, world. I believe in people that really see the products and, you know, have their own opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you find that, you know, I think the influencer world has become this like almost like larger than life thing. And now there's so many influencers, it's impossible to keep up. But now there's this trend of micro influencers.
Yes.
So what is your feeling on micro influencers? Do you think that's more going to become more relevant in the next couple years?
A lot of people start their business word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're really lucky that we do have social media. So word of mouth, you know, more people hear you. I think, you know, the micro influencers, especially if it's authentic, like when I do something, I don't pay any influencers. I'm really lucky. I have a lot of friends that have a lot of, you know, followers, but it's not even just about the followers. It's about, you know, if they like something and they tell their sister, their mother,
mm-hmm.
That's how I build Bobbi Brown Cosmetics, by the way, where people telling other people they really liked it.
Well, I love that. And also, like, obviously, if you're an entrepreneur and you're just starting out, you don't have big budgets to necessarily pay people to talk about your products. It's really going to come down to you reaching out, you finding your advocates, and then really having them spread the word from there.
And there's other ways to get people to know about it. So if you have something great, I mean, you know, being on people's podcasts, doing Facebook Live, there's so many things you could do to reach people.
Absolutely, that are essentially free. Mm-hmm. So what does the rest of 2018 look like for you? And what are your visions for the company? And what are some of the new ventures you're excited about?
Well, right now we have 4 products in Evolution 18. We have just turned on our direct-to-consumer website. We were exclusive with QVC for 3 months. So now we're looking at other retailers and, you know, other ways to sell. And I'm really excited about that because I will never go back to the traditional department store. So I love all the new things. I'm excited about that. We've got 2 new products that are launching in the fall and a bunch of other things that we're working on that I can't talk about yet. but I'm excited.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations. And QVC, great way to launch. So this one's a little heavy, but yeah. You could take it with a grain of salt. But what do you want your legacy to be when people look back at your career?
You know what? I think I know what my legacy is going to be. I think it's going to be that, Bobbi was a woman that helped people feel comfortable in their skin. And she was a really great family person.
Oh, I love that. And it's so true. I think, you know, now there's a lot of trend toward like really heavy makeup and contour and all these things. And, you know, I just loved, you know, kind of watching the evolution of your brand, but also like the focus on natural beauty and beauty from within obviously is such a great message. And so obviously carrying through to your new projects as well when you're focusing on this new lifestyle and lifestyle brand. So we're going to do a little bit of rapid fire.
Okay.
So for you, are you in the office early or burning the midnight oil?
Definitely early.
Amazing. I'm the same way too. Early bird. Yep. To contour or not to contour? I think I know the answer to this one.
Do not contour. I wish I could contour my stomach, but I'm not big on contour.
Bootstrap or get investments?
Bootstrap 100%.
Stiff drink or long run?
Both, but not at the same time.
Yes.
Not at the same time.
Great advice. Big risk, big reward, or play it safe?
Big risk, big reward. Oh. And make sure that it's smart.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, Bobbi. We loved having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. Good luck with all your endeavors also.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Work Party, the podcast. If you felt inspired and learned something new, let us know in a review on iTunes and check us out on social at Work Party. For every episode, we have downloadable resources available on workparty.com so you can put these tips and tools into action for your own business. Thanks again for listening. And as always, work hard, party on.